I believe the Supreme Court decision today is a true indictment of the way President Donald Trump does his business. We have tried to say that over and over to America in our 84 lawsuits against this administration, that the way Donald Trump does business is not America's way, that the way Donald Trump does business is not according to the rule of law.
California Attorney General Javier Becerra there at a virtual conference on Thursday. Thursday was the same day that the Supreme Court ruled against the Trump administration's attempt to end Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, also known as DACA. DACA was established by the Obama administration in 2012, and it was meant as a way to protect hundreds of thousands of immigrants who were brought to the U.S. as children from being deported. President Trump tried to end the program in September 2017, but the move was blocked in the lower courts. With the Supreme Court's ruling last week, DACA is safe for now. I'm Tanzina Vega, and that's where we start this week on The Takeaway. For more on this, we turn to Nicole Narea, an immigration reporter at Vox. Nicole, welcome back to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Tanzina.
Also with us is Shobha Sivaprasad Wadia, director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic at Penn State Law and author of Banned: Immigration Enforcement in the Time of Trump. Shobha, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So, Nicole, let's start with you. What does the Supreme Court decision mean for DACA recipients? Many of these folks have been here since they were children and have now they're studying, they're working. Does that say that they can continue to live their lives?
So Dreamers are feeling like they can breathe a little easier for the moment. This is a hard-won victory after years of litigation since Trump tried to end the DACA program in 2017. So last week, at least, they were celebrating. For many of them, DACA represents their life and livelihood in the U.S. They've been, as you said, settled here for years and established families and careers here. So the prospect of being deported, as the Trump administration had said it would do if they lost their DACA status, would have been very devastating to them. But as you said, this ruling really only represents momentary relief, and they still face challenges ahead because Trump could still well end DACA.
And Shobha, let's talk a little bit about some of the judges' responses here in the opinion. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the majority opinion. Does it leave the door open for another attempt at dismantling DACA?
Well, that depends. The court did offer a victory for the rule of law and for Dreamers last Thursday and answered two questions. First, can the case be reviewed by the court? They answered yes. And second, whether the way the Trump administration ended DACA was lawful. And to that, the court said no and found that the way that DACA ended was arbitrary and capricious under administrative law. So what could happen next when it comes to the administration? They could follow the rules of what the lower courts do on remand and reinstate DACA as it existed in 2012. That's what the face of the decision offers. On the other hand, the Department of Homeland Security could decide to write a new memorandum and provide more explanation or elaboration that the Roberts Court found to be lacking. And if that happens, maybe there's a possibility for DACA to end at some point in the future.
And Shobha, just quickly, we also know that Sonia Sotomayor, Justice Sotomayor, wrote her own separate opinion criticizing the court for not taking into account Trump's past racist and anti-immigrant remarks. Your thoughts on that opinion?
Correct. So she did join the decision on administrative law, but also wanted to carve out her own position on the equal protection claim. And I think these were important words. She found that the words of the president, the way he talked about Mexicans, for example, helped to, quote, create a strong perception that the decision to end DACA was based on discriminatory animus. So she would have allowed the equal protection claim to move forward. And I think it's interesting because you see that she shared a similar sentiment when she issued her dissent in the travel ban case and found that animus was driving the various versions of the travel ban that excludes people from majority Muslim countries. I think it's also an interesting way to think about where we are as a country now. Right now, Justice Sotomayor was on her own. But if we look at the court of public opinion, the conversation about race and racism in America is surfacing in significant ways. So maybe next time when this claim comes around again, Justice Sotomayor will not be alone.
Nicole, do we know, stepping away from DACA specifically for the moment and looking more at sort of at the broader landscape here in terms of deportations, specifically, we know that there are still folks, you know, the news media may have pivoted to covering other topics, but there are still families at the border. There are still people living in these detention centers. So I'm just wondering, Nicole, can you give us a sense of whether this moment has affected other deportations or the potential for deportations around the country?
Well, not necessarily this moment in particular in terms of DACA, but I do think that this has been a loss for the Trump administration, and immigration has long been one of his signature issues. And going into an election year, he really is hearkening back to the anti-immigrant agenda that seemed to resonate with his base in 2016. And he's doing that by enacting new restrictions on asylum as well as on legal immigration. On asylum, he's been really trying to dismantle the asylum system for years now, and it was already incredibly difficult for people arriving at the southern border to obtain asylum, but the pandemic has given him the opportunity to implement even more stringent restrictions. For example, he's invoked a provision of immigration law that allows officials to turn away anyone who could pose a risk of spreading contagious disease, and implemented a new program that rapidly returns asylum seekers back to Mexico without even a medical inspection. Already over 20,000 people have been expelled through that program, including unaccompanied children. He also recently proposed a rule that would methodically gut the asylum system in a way that would block most people from obtaining asylum even beyond the pandemic. It would vastly expand immigration officials' authority to reject asylum seekers' applications without so much as a hearing, as well as make it all but impossible for victims of gang-related and gender-based violence to obtain protection in the U.S. So on the whole, Trump has really been clamping down on the asylum system as well as on legal immigration. In April, he issued an executive order that temporarily suspended the issuance of new green cards, and we approve over 350,000 green card applications per year. So if Trump decides to keep this ban in place through the end of the year, it could really impact hundreds of thousands of people. He's also planning to issue an executive order restricting foreign workers coming on visas on the premise of protecting American workers, though there's some debate over whether foreign workers actually do displace American workers, and that could affect over 230,000 people. And he said over the weekend that he would announce it by today, so we could well see those restrictions coming down very soon.
Shoba, Nicole, thank you for that, because I think it's important for us to remember the moment that we're living in that has now, just in the past couple of months, really become, shall we say, intense in the United States. We're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. We're dealing with now the third or almost more than 3 weeks of continual protests across the country for racial justice. Shoba, can you tell us what the role of immigrants has been in uprisings against police brutality that we're seeing right now? And is there any overlap that we're witnessing in terms of the fight for example, abolishing ICE and defunding the police?
Yeah, those are all great questions. And the history of immigration enforcement in this country bears a lot of resemblance to what our criminal justice system looks like. In connecting some of the dots in this moment, even at these very protests, where the American public is saying no more to the deaths of unarmed Black Black men and women, you have the administration making the choice to deploy ICE and CBP officers to protests to conduct arrests. So I find that troubling on a few levels, including but not limited.
Sure, but I just want to clarify there. You said to conduct arrests, to arrest whom? You're saying that there are ICE officials that are being deployed to protests for racial justice and are seeking out what they believe would be undocumented folks?
Well, that's certainly one target. And what is troubling about that is that ICE's own policy says that it will not conduct immigration enforcement in locations such as rallies and protests. Another overlap is with regard to immigration detention, which is one of the largest forms of mass incarceration in this country and is one that houses largely brown and black immigrants. So I think there's overlap when we think about detention and who we detain and who we deport and this movement.
Nicole, we got about a minute left. Curious about how you think this is going to play out for 2020 in terms of the president's reelection campaign. We saw an anemic showing over the weekend at his rally in Tulsa. Then, you know, this comes after a week where the Supreme Court ruled against the president twice, including on one of his key issues, which is immigration. How is this going to play out in the campaign trail? A minute left.
He really seems to be sort of grasping at straws here in terms of making immigration one of his core issues and alienating members even of his own party in terms of enacting restrictions on immigration and also in really clamping down on black and brown communities throughout this whole movement for racial justice. And it seems that, at least based on recent polling, that Joe Biden has pulled ahead in recent weeks. But, you know, it's really not clear what will happen in November. And I think that could really have an impact for DACA recipients who right now are still in a state of limbo.
Nicole Nerea is an immigration reporter at Vox, and Shova Sivaprasad Wadia is a professor at Penn State Law and the director of the Center for Immigrants' Rights Clinic. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.